T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We continue here from St. Joe. Chiefs training camp underway. Practice has actually wrapped up here in the last half hour or so. It is the 11 o'clock hour here for Cody and Gold. Coming up 1 hour from now, we'll talk to Whit. Normally, we would be joined by Whit Merrifield right about now, but he's going to join us coming up at 12:05. We'll talk about the weekend series, but more importantly, this Friday's trade deadline. And it feels different this year with the conversations around Whit Merrifield. This is nothing new, as we asked him last week, that his name is coming up in trade discussions, or would the Royals be willing to move him. But it feels different to me this year with Whit in terms of how people are talking about him and some of the reporting. The latest report that has everybody talking is that the Mariners are making a push to trade for Whit.
And like one Jared Kelenic.
Right. Their top prospect who got called up and then struggled and it was sent back down, but still he's their top prospect. But he mentions why Merrifield is so attractive, and it's, of course, his play, but also the contract. He's under control through 2023, and you're talking about $10 million or so over the next 2 years, and there's a option in 2023. We know what he's capable of doing. He still leads the majors in steals. He's still towards the top of the league in hits. He's been consistent as anybody on the Royals organization. But it feels different because that report, there's been three or four others that have kind of mentioned his name, and it doesn't seem like it's the flat-out denial that maybe we've kind of heard in the past where it's like, no, he's not getting moved. Yeah, they still need to get blown away by an offer. I agree. We can talk about that in a second. But it feels different to me. It's not the normal, oh, it's the trade deadline. Of course, his name is, of course his name is being brought up. This feels different to me.
Because they're quieter about it. Like you said, the whole denial part hasn't occurred. There are some reports that say they're still not going to move him or they're going to want a haul to do it. And then, and that doesn't seem wrong to me, but they're stuck between two worlds. This is Josh Vernier, our Royals insider. He was on Fesco in the morning. This is the problem. They are stuck between two worlds. What is reality and what do they believe? And do those two things align? Because he's saying if you trade Whit Merrifield now, you're just giving up on 2022.
If they trade Whit Merrifield, that's the white flag on 2022. So while everyone's waiting for the breaking news or for the tips one way or the other, if it happens, that's the smoke signal that next year is going to be all about, once again, developing these young arms and allowing Bobby Witt Jr. and Nick Prado to stretch their legs in the big leagues a little.
And that's the truth behind it. Like, it's not just, if you trade Whit, it's not the white flag on this year, which has happened months ago, or a month ago. It's the white flag on next year, because you can't tell me you're planning on being a playoff team and trade your most consistent starter on your entire roster.
No, that's the issue, and that's, to me, the dilemma that you have to decide. You know what the message was in training, in a spring training. And
sorry, we're
was,
at training
I know,
camp,
yeah,
so.
How about that, yeah. And so there was about winning this year. You saw their moves spoke like that as well with how they acted in the front office. Certainly April got everybody's hopes up. And as we've seen the year go on, I think we started to look at some of the young pitching, and we'll talk about Daniel Lynch in a second, but prior to last night's start from or yesterday's start for Daniel Lynch, you're wondering, like, how on earth can I look at this rotation even next year and say they're going to be ready? And then you're trying to tell me that they could move on from Whit Merrifield and convince us that 2022 is a year in which they can be more competitive than they've been this year, and more competitive as in actually vie for a playoff spot.
Without their leadoff hitter,
I can't put that together. And you know, look, we're all high on Bobby Witt Jr. He continues just to crush it at AAA in his first week. It's just insane.
440-foot
Nick Prado hits a go-ahead grand slam. I mean, they're both continuing to do exactly what they did at AA and AAA. I'm as excited as anybody. We're right there with you guys. But relying on both those two guys to come up immediately and contribute and carry a team, essentially, potentially, along with Salvi and some other guys, next year is asking a lot. No matter how good we think these guys both could be, Bobby Witt Jr. in particular, you know what you're getting in Whit Merrifield. there's still the unknown with some of these other guys. Witt is the most consistent player on the team. He leads the league in stolen bases.
He's one of the most affordable players.
He's also not going to cost you much money. He's versatile. He can play second. He can play the outfield. He can play everywhere on the diamond. And so I'm not telling you I'm against the trade, but if you're against the trade, if you're going to go ahead and make the trade, then A, you better get a hell of a haul. And then B, you got to be all right with saying to everybody that, yeah, you know what, we thought 2022 was going to be our year. No, it's now going to be 2023. Then if that's the case, I'm going to go ahead and trade Carlos Santana as well. I'm going to go ahead and trade, you know, some other guys that I don't think I'm going to get extensions done with.
I might trade one of the long-term relief arms. The problem is we already know what the price tag is. It's what the Pirates just got for Adam Frazier, isn't it? Like, he's a second baseman who currently leads the major league in hits, who just went to a contending team, and the price tag was the eighth overall prospect inside of the Padres system. That was the going rate. So ask yourself, is that the price tag you're willing to take for Whit Merrifield, a controllable player, at his price tag? And that becomes a much more difficult question, because I think in our mind it's like, yeah, Kalinic.
Yeah. Give me, that's not happening.
Everybody, no, it's not.
Everybody, I mean, you kind of said that, but you're not serious about it. There's no way you're getting their number one prospect.
If they would
give
him up, I want Whit to be in Kansas City for the rest of his career and for him to see the winning times in Kansas City. Like he told Lynn Worthy yesterday, he wants to be here through the winning. I would love that for Whit Merrifield. But if Kalinic's on the table and he can go to a winner now, I'd be hard-pressed to say that that's not the thing. But I don't think that that's realistic. I think it probably is realistic to look at someone's fifth through 10th best prospect inside their own system, which probably means they're a fringe Baseball America 100 guy, right? They're like Nick Prado at 74, who I think just put out their list again, but they're not Bobby Wood Jr., not the fifth best prospect in baseball, because he's not an old player, Whit Merrifield, but he's older.
He's not 28.
It's not the age you traded Carlos Beltran. It's not the age you do all those things. So it changes a lot. But it's a mistake. Honestly, trading Whit's a mistake. Because you're never going to get the haul back in return for what you get from Whit. Like, what you get in value from Whit. It's on you to put a winner around him, because I don't think Whit can do more than he's already doing.
Yeah, but the argument is, if you even if you hold on to him, if I told you Whit's on the team next year, do you think next year they still have a chance at actually, like, do you truly believe if Whit's on the roster next year, and assume, yes, Bobby Witt's on the roster, of course, by that point in time as well,
right
do
now,
you actually think 2022 is it either way, whether he's on the roster or not? Because if the answer is
I don't think
it's 2022 if he's on the roster, and, you know, you got 2 years of team control left, I get it, and then there's an option, so essentially you've got 3 years, assuming all goes well in that regard. At that point in time, he's 3 years older. While we all want the big haul, does that make sense to have him at age 36? And look, Whit's going to join us coming up in less than an hour at 12:05. I think none of us would want to see him get traded. But if the thought process is where this team is at 2 or 3 years from now, does a 35 or 36-year-old Whit Merrifield make sense at that point in time? That's the question. I hope he's playing at the same level.
Here's the thing,
a couple years from now, but
we
don't know.
I think the Royals do think they're going to be good next year. I think they think that about themselves.
Yeah, and I mean,
they've never indicated otherwise.
I would love for that to be the case, but it's hard for me to imagine that that's actually where things are headed.
It's hard because we're watching this year's team now, and what's going to be – now, there is going to be a dramatic difference between next year and this year, right? Bobby Witt Jr. will be on the team. And maybe Nick Prado.
Yep.
Maybe that's an upgrade from what you're currently getting with the, I don't know, 350 at-bats you give Ryan O'Hearn this year.
His birthday today, too, by the way. Happy birthday, Ryan O'Hearn. Some of us show some love on this show.
Half.
Bro Hearn.
One half of this show shows love for Ryan O'Hearn. But I'm just saying, like, maybe it's a slight upgrade, but they still have serious questions about the pitching. So I've got to talk myself into Daniel Lynch's start last night, which was great. 8 innings, 4 strikeouts, he dominated. I got to convince myself that's coming, and Coar is going to be better when he pitches again. And, you know, like, to really be convincing to next year.
What really was surprising me over the weekend, the same reporter, Mark Feinsand, who was talking about the possibility of Whit being traded, he also mentioned that the Dodgers have joined the Giants as a contender with interest in Danny Duffy. Now, Duffy's on the IO. He's got a left flexor strain. I kind of had said, all right, well, he's not going to be.
He's not getting moved.
He can technically come off the IL two days before Friday, so he can come off, I think, Wednesday. Before the trade deadline, 4 o'clock, 3 o'clock Central Time on Friday. This report was interesting to me because I just had assumed that the likelihood of Danny Duffy being traded was gone with the IL. But in this report, it mentions that Duffy is, of course, spoken, as we know, about wanting to stay in KC, but he's a California native, and he has to waive his 10-5, no trade rights, which we understand. But Dodgers, Giants, Padres, Mariners, for that matter, any of those West Coast teams that are battling it out in the AL or NL West,
and think they might get a month out of a starter.
They would want, you know, a fifth starter heading into the stretch run of their season. Look, if Danny Duffy, even coming 2 days off the IL, you can get something for him, I'm making that trade because I can still go and bring him back in the offseason potentially as a free agent if I want to. So that's a guy where if you're telling me a team is actually willing to give you something for Duffy, who's, I think, on the verge of maybe being shut down for the season, and someone's willing to take a flyer on a guy, they think they can get a little bit of work out of him, I make that trade, Cody, because I think you can still bring him back after his contract's up at the end of the year.
No, it's the same as it was before. Both of us were willing to make that. I get it. It's hard because the Barrymore Royal stuff and everything that kind of comes into that. But still, honestly, I think that it makes a lot of sense to make that move, especially now because of the injury. He can't help you enough this year. And he couldn't help you next year technically yet either because he's not under contract. So if he's going to help you next year, that's a phone call away. That's Dayton with Mike Minor going to be like, hey, Duff, want to come back to the Royals? Love having you here. We still need a little bit of a runway time on that. So, no, I'm a little surprised that he's still getting kicked around, but I'm fine with whatever happens on that end.
If we're looking for optimism, though, for the first time this year, we saw some optimism on the youth going forward. I'm excited about Andrew Benintendi. I want them to give him an extension. But on the pitching route, whether it was Coar or Lynch earlier on, or even Brady Singer at times this year, even Brad Keller, there hadn't been a whole lot of reason to believe the young
Keller's
pitching
got three
was
straight
developed.
Quality starts.
Thank goodness, that's a nice sign. But Daniel Lynch, best start of any pitcher this year, a complete reset, 8 innings, shutout baseball, much, much better, obviously where things were at. And I'm willing to now go ahead and say, all right, if you are able to come back after being in AAA the way he was, after 2-3 really terrible outings, and come back and have the best outing we've seen of any pitcher this year in the Royals organization at the big league level, I'm willing to go ahead and hit the reset button on that because it's not as if he just came back up and finally gave you 5 innings. He came back up and had one of the best outings you'll see in baseball this year, certainly the best in the Royals uniform so far. So I'm going to hit the reset button, and I've got the optimism once again for him. I'm not saying that, oh, man, now he's going to go be a Cy Young guy again.
Which was okay? My feeling on him as a prospect.
But it's a great sign that he was able to go down to AAA and the mental aspect of the game and what that must have been like to go through it. And to come back and not just mentally handle it, but clearly made some adjustments to go out. And I get it was the Tigers, I understand, but still big
Tigers
league, still
been
big league competition, man. That was a great sign. That's the first time this year I've been able to sit here and look at some of the young pitchers. And I'll throw that in with a couple of the guys that have been in the majors for a little bit. Including some starts last year. And I sat here and said, wow, okay, that there's some reason where you should maybe feel a little bit better. We got to see it multiple times, of course, but that was stellar, man.
Well, his first three starts went 8 innings, yeah. And last night's start went 8 innings. Although, of course, they made it a little bit interesting there. Irvin Santana trying to make that game a little bit interesting there in the end. Finally. And I know that it's just one start and we shouldn't just completely erase it, but for the same reason we said it's just three starts or it's just two starts for Coar and Lynch is the same reason I can look at this and say, whew, right? Take a breath. One of these guys are actually capable of doing the thing we're talking about. And while you might make fun of Detroit, they score more runs per game than the Royals. They're essentially a league average offense. They're 18th in the league in runs per game. So they're not a bad offense. They're not going up against the Rangers or the Marlins. He didn't dominate a laughably bad offense. He lapped up what was a league average offense to the tune of 8 innings. He didn't have the huge strikeout numbers. And I saw someone, people don't want to hear, but like the spin rate down or whatever. His accuracy yesterday was the thing that did it for me. It was just he was painting corners. He wasn't in the middle. And that's the thing we've seen be a problem for all these Royals pitchers this entire year. And that's what he talked about in postgame. He said when he went down, the one thing he had learned was, oh, I see. That pitch that I used to get away with, that pitch doesn't work anymore. I got to be in a different part of the diamond. He's like, it didn't even matter as much what the actual results were in AAA versus what I needed to do to get big leagues hitters out at this level. It did give me renewed optimism. And I've been as high, like Lynch is still my favorite of all the pitching prospects for the Royals. And I'm not a scout, but of all the pitching prospects, I'm higher on Daniel Lynch than any other one they have in their system. So to actually see somebody realize some of that talent for even one start was really reassuring.
I mean, it's the flip of where we were at because once we saw Coar and Lynch get called up and perform the way they did in those first few outings, it soured your optimism. It was disheartening about the entire idea of these young pitchers developing. It is just one start. I get it. But at the same time, now I'm thinking, okay, well then, how good could Kowar look now, maybe after he went down to AAA and clearly needed to make some adjustments? And I think it's only a matter of time probably before we see Kowar again, and maybe in the next week or two. Who knows, depending on what they do at the trade deadline and everything, too, on Friday. And so now I'm really intrigued to see Kowar again, because if not that he's going to go and pitch 8 shutout innings, but the fact that we've seen that they were able to make, at least in Lynch's case, adjustments to get him feeling confident and, as you said, commanding his pitches well enough like he was yesterday. So it kind of does give you some optimism on what was completely soured, at least in my case, on some of the young pitching. At least for one day, you feel a little bit better about it.
Well, I mean, his ERA is still like 7-something, right? It's not.
Yeah, but see, I hit the reset on that. I'm willing to.
Is ERA 0 to you?
Yeah, well, yeah. Based off of yesterday's outing, I mean, if he goes out next outing and he has another, you know, 2-inning outing and 5 runs, then I'm like, oh. But if next outing he goes and pitches 6 innings
and gives up 4, then he's a totally fine.
He's a normal pitcher. Yeah. You know. So we'll see. It was nice to have some optimism around that. We'll talk some more Chiefs football coming up in the Chiefs Red Half Hour, 12 minutes away. We're live here in St. Joe at the Chiefs practice facility, or the Chiefs field, I should say, as practice had wrapped up. We're out here throughout the week, starting back up on Wednesday. Tomorrow's a closed day as they go through their conditioning test. But Fesco in the Morning will be out here Wednesday morning. We'll be on from 10 to 2 on Wednesday as well, here on your official broadcast partner for the Chiefs, 610 Sports Radio. You told me something yesterday, and I don't know which direction this is headed. You said you've got an update for me. I've been asked in public about your cat. It's, what, 2.5, 3 weeks ago?
I just saw Matt Derrick up in the tent. He asked me about it.
Okay, it's been 3 weeks since you told us you opened the door, let your cat out. I assume the cat's gone. The cat's gone forever. What's up? What's up with the cat?
So I have an update. I will preface this by saying I have not yet confirmed that it is our cat, but we might have gotten the cat.
Hold on. What do you mean you might have? How did you find the cat?
It takes some explaining. So
the cat's alive, you think?
We think. By this afternoon, we should have a full answer. So maybe we should save this for later, but I don't think that it. I think you need the whole backstory before.
Yeah, I do, because I'm confused.
So,
what do you mean you think?
A couple of weeks ago, we were called by a woman who said, hey, I saw this cat. She lives not far from us. I saw this cat. It kind of looks like this. And she described him. We're like, that's not our cat. Right? You could tell. It's not our cat. We know what our cat looks like. The description she's giving doesn't sound like our cat. So we're like, nope, not our cat. Sorry. We really appreciate it, though. Thank you. Seemed a bit chatty, but we move on. Yesterday, that same woman calls again and is giving a new description of a different cat that sounds a lot like our cat. Bright color eyes, sneezing a lot. I told you it's a very hard
cat. Are we sure she's just not a listener of the show?
She has taken the cat into her home at this time and has now reached out to us describing what we think is our cat. Sounds like our cat, right?
Uh-huh.
100% sounds like our cat. She's calling from a landline. She's probably in her 70s or, you know, like late 60s. So, you know, we didn't ask for a text message photo of the cat.
Oh, you got to get a photo.
I didn't ask for proof.
You need photo evidence. Yeah.
Well, we try, but it's like, it's not her cell phone number. It's just a landline. So, whatever. My wife was on the phone with her, so we don't have any proof of life yet for the cat. What I'm going to tell you is, so she calls, and my wife agrees, like, the lady says that the grandson has grown attached to the cat.
So
she has asked that my wife yesterday come over after 6 p.m. when a grandson wouldn't be there to get the cat. No problem. It's like 3:30 at this time. We'll come over in a couple of hours. We'll get the cat. Problem solved. At 5:30, she calls and says they can't locate the cat inside the house at the moment.
What?
Can they just bring the cat to us tomorrow? But in addition to that, she's asking questions like, does everybody in the house want the cat back?
This is not good for you.
I wasn't on the phone call. This is my wife. But now we're worried she's trying to take the cat or was hoping we would just volunteer it to live with her forever. Like, you know what? Don't really like the cat. You can keep it anyway. Despite the fact we've gone through all this effort.
How long did you have the cat for?
The cat. 6 years.
Yeah, this is bad.
It's not like a new cat.
It's good in the fact that it sounds like your cat might still be alive.
We think.
But when you said that right there, this is exactly what's happening. Some families probably had this cat. You said recently. I bet you they've had it for 3 weeks the whole time.
Do you think it's 3 weeks?
And
I think
I think they didn't know it was a missing cat. The grandson's become attached to the cat. They really like the cat, and they really don't want to give the cat back. And now it's like this battle, and they're hoping that you're going to forget. Maybe they're regretting they even told you they found the cat.
Well, it's too late. I know where they live. They've given me their address.
What I'm confused, why is it taking so many days?
I won't do what I got to do.
Why is it taking me so
– like Liam Neeson and Taken.
If I had somebody else's cat or dog, if I found it last night, I would have called you and your ass would have come and picked it up last night. Unless, again, they want to keep the cat. I'm worried that you guys are letting this drag on too much. This needs to be resolved away.
You need to put the hammer down.
She was the one on both phone calls because she has her number. I didn't realize that this was going until after these conversations are done. She is now very worried. If we don't have the cat in this possession by this afternoon, I'm going to drive over there after the show and say, I'd like one cat, please.
Can you call Animal Patrol, or how does this work? How do you
She's microchipped. The cat definitely belongs to me.
How do pet disputes work in this regard?
The audacity of this woman, by the way.
On top of it, by the way, weirdest connection ever, Nick, it's the mom of a girl I made out with in high school.
Wait, it's the mom?
You made out with the 70-year-old?
No, the daughter.
The daughter.
She's the mom. I made out with her daughter.
What do you remember about that time in your life?
I don't know. I was like a freshman in high school. We didn't really hang out much after that. She seemed like a nice girl.
It was just a little fling?
We went to a dance with each other.
Okay.
And then we were hanging out with some older kids, and I don't know, for whatever reason,
another.
We didn't ever really, date or whatever.
Were you respectful?
Yes, very. Very.
Because I'm worried here, if you were a jerk to her.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
If you were a jerk to her,
exactly.
She might have told her mother. Yeah, remember that guy in high school that I cried about for days because he was a jerk?
So here's the thing. I don't think she's connected those dots. We only connected because she gave her first and last name. That's an interesting
last
name.
Wait, she doesn't even remember you? That's how forgettable that kiss was?
This is the mom we're dealing with, the daughter we've never talked to. You think she's trying to take the cat?
Yes.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That's exactly what's going on.
Are you blind?
No, I definitely
This cat is being ripped away from you.
I think she was hoping we would just be like, you know what?
She's regretting that she called you. She's regretting she called you.
She's just going to steal my cat?
Initially, she had good intentions at first when she called you, and then now she's regretting it big time. And she's stalling it out. They're trying to think about what to say, what to do, what the next move is.
And they think you're
a sucker. They think you're a sucker, man. They're playing you for a sucker. That's why you need to put the hammer down. Say, listen. Listen, fun and games are over. I'm coming to get this cat right now.
Text line says it was a cordial makeout, apparently, from early in the show.
I'm telling you, by the end of this show, if the cat is not in my possession, I'm going straight. I have her address.
Can we go drive there after the show?
I'm going
Can I go with you? Can we go pick this cat up?
Get my cat.
I want to go pick this cat up. We got to get this over with.
But after all this,
the cat's alive.
We think it is. I still don't have confirmation. They described a lot of things. I can't imagine it's not our cat. It's like there's too many things. Doppelganger.
They've had this cat for 3 weeks. I'm telling you,
it's
they've had it the
days.
Whole time.
Cody, you need to rip the sleeves off your shirt, oil up your biceps, and go get that cat tonight.
How quickly could a kid, I think you said her grandson's six.
Uh-huh.
How quickly could a six-year-old get attached to a cat?
In a day, right? I could see that happening.
In a day? I think it's got to be like they've had the cat for at least
You know
three.
How little
it's
kids
a kid.
Are.
It's a kid. I'm not surprised the kid would have got attached to the pet. I feel like this stuff happens a lot, which is why you need to go over there and end it today. It's over.
Get the cat today. Supposedly they're supposed to contact us. They all work nights or overnights or something. Oh, so
they're packing up their house and leaving town as we speak.
They're going to run away? That's the only alternative. Otherwise, I know where you live.
I just can't believe you guys are waiting that your wife hasn't, this morning, went over and got the cat.
Very panicked about it last night, but then it was late, and it's like, now what do we do?
I already have the address. Oh, dude, this morning
what
you should have gone over there
for?
And not.
This morning I left at 6:45 to come here.
Wake her up. She's old. She's probably been up since 5 a.m.
They just told me they work
That's
nights.
Offensive, Alex.
Whatever. It's probably the truth.
We have been accused of being ageist on this show before, so now we're right back into that ballpark.
Someone says, drive the 610 van, have Gold interview her, and ask if she frequently thefts neighborhood cats. Like a 610 investigation. Let me go up there first. You don't go there. Let me go there first. Let's settle this right now.
I'm going to shame them if this, I have a platform.
Text line thinks she's going to tell you the cat ran
off. Bring your kids with you and make them cry on command. That way they're like, listen, my kids are really attached too.
I also have little kids, and they also would like our cat back.
Someone said someone wanted to know, quit talking bad about their grandma. I love that cat. I named him Sneezy. I can't wait for the development on this later today. If you don't go there today, I'm serious. If you don't go there today, Nick and I are going to show up and take care of this.
Good.
And I don't even like cats.
We're keeping it. We're not going to give it back. If we have to go get it, we're keeping the cat.
It becomes the show's cat.
It belongs to 610.
That's right. All right, coming up next, we get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. If this particular lineman is who we think he is, it spells big things for the Chiefs. We'll tell you about it next.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Chiefs Red Half Hour, every day at 11:30 on Cody and Gold.
Yes, let's talk some Chiefs football. We're up in St. Joe. Chiefs training camp underway. Veterans reporting later on this afternoon. Expect to hear from Anthony Hitchens and Mecole Hardman perhaps during the drive later on this afternoon in the 4 o'clock hour. So just to put a bow on what we were discussing about your cats, earlier today on the show, you were also mentioning that four listeners are fully invested in the cat at this point.
Yeah, I think they are.
And the consensus is, just so you know, that you, after the show, go directly there. Multiple people have said that. So
I'm telling you, if the cat is not in possession of my family by the time I leave, that's
you take your T-Rex lunchbox. He was giving me crap for my 64-ounce water jug.
That's comically big.
Cody's
got a normal size.
Cody's got a T-Rex lunchbox out here with a pink frozen thing inside of it.
There's no pink frozen thing.
Cody, remember a couple weeks ago when you fixed the car?
Yeah. Okay.
When you fixed that car and the look on your wife's face, like, this is the man I chose.
Uh-huh.
That's all going to be gone if you don't get this cat back.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I'm telling you, if I will give an update by the end of the show, when we go to, 1:55 or whatever, 2 o'clock when the show ends, if the cat is not owned by my family by then, I'm going directly there and I will give you an update via Twitter.
Okay, I cannot wait for that. Or maybe you got to save it for the show tomorrow. I think that's a better idea,
depending
on how this goes. So best of luck with the cat. We are here, though, up in St. Joe. Chiefs camp is underway. Tomorrow they'll go through the conditioning test and then we'll be back up here on Wednesday along with Fesco in the morning. One guy, though, that was hard to miss out here during even just the walkthrough stuff that they were doing today was Trey Smith. He is every bit of, what do they list him at, 6'6", 332, something like that. He is every bit 335. He is every bit of that, and he's a name that continues to come up heading into camp as someone that legitimately, other than Creed Humphrey, who I think will be the starting center, has a chance to be one of the rookies that gets immediate playing time as a starter, especially with the Kyle Long injury. And we'll see LDT out here on Wednesday for the first time and see kind of what he's looking like. But Trey Smith is the name that everybody talks about, and the fact that he continues to be discussed, that's not just some random thing that started one day. Like, there are multiple people that talk with people within the Chiefs organization that, much like camp last year, there's always a name. L'Jarius Sneed last year was a name that people kind of started talking about. Man, no, the Chiefs really, really like this guy. They think they got a steal. They think they got a steal. He might be one of the steals of the draft. And, yeah, it turned out that was the case. It seems like Trey Smith is a candidate for that, and he brings something that we haven't seen on this offensive line a whole lot. Maybe we saw a little bit last year with Kelechi Osemele, and that's just the attitude aspect to this offensive line that maybe they haven't had in the past. This is what even Trey Smith had to say about his offseason and what he brings to the table.
This is why I play the game. I mean, I love beating people up, man. I love just, like, knocking someone down, rolling over them, you know, just talking in their head after the play's over with. But it's just sort of my personality. If you know me, I'm sort of a goon. But I just really enjoy the violence aspect of playing football.
He enjoys the violence aspect. I love rolling over on someone and yelling in their ear, talking some crap, perhaps, in their ear. Like that. How do you not love that? They haven't always had guys like that. Kelechi Osemele last year for, what, 3 or 4 games – I remember we were discussing him. We had a few guests on. They're like, this
finally
is some fire that they haven't had on the O-line. It was unfortunate that it was short-lived. But now they've got a guy that has a chance to be a starter on week one if he wins this job at the right guard spot.
If he backs up what he's saying, this is exactly what they rebuilt the offensive line for. He's not the figurehead of it, obviously, because that's Orlando Brown after what they gave up and eventually the contract they'll give him. But this is a different style. This is where I was talking about, like, the offense, how it's going to look different. This is a different style of offensive line than they've had really probably at any stage under Andy Reid's tenure. They took a crack at getting a couple of people in the building more like that last year when they did Osemele, and we were like, look at him pave the way for Clyde Edwards' 130-yard day. and it felt like we had missed that. I hope that that's what they got in Trey Smith. I would caution, like any sixth-round pick, a little bit of dial it back in. I would say that because Mitch Holthus joined Fesco in the morning today and had this to say about Trey Smith.
I get really excited when I see Trey Smith. And I had a chance to talk with him yesterday. This guy is tough, smart, big. And I've tried not to get ahead of myself and get too excited. You guys know I don't get excited very often. But I see some Will Shields in Trey Smith.
Wow.
And I know I'm ahead of the game. I want to see him in pads. I want to see him in OLDL. But what I'm seeing so far is Trey Smith could be one of the top five steal picks of the 2020 draft, of the whole draft, not just for the Chiefs.
The last part there that could end up being one of the steals of the draft, that would be the L'Jarius Sneed scenario, where now we all know if L'Jarius Sneed were to be redrafted in last year's draft, he's a first-round pick, maybe a top 15,
might be a top 15
pick. If that happens with Trey Smith, then that's an incredible spot to be in back-to-back years where you found mid, in this case, late pick, sixth-round pick, that can be a starter, an impactful player right away. The Will Shields thing, Will Shields is a Hall of Famer, not just a Chiefs Hall of Famer, a pro football
Hall of Famer. He's certainly
size. I mean, Mitch even said, I might be getting ahead of myself. I mean, I think so, but that has to get you excited if you're a Chiefs fan. It does for me when I hear that that at least is something that is being discussed. The fact that even anybody would hint about that when it comes to you and you've never even played a snap in the NFL tells you you're continuing to hear things from inside the Chiefs organization.
And generally speaking, I think when the Chiefs have played someone up pretty big in training camp, it has ended in results. Last year was Clyde Edwards-Helaire and L'Jarius Sneed. They mentioned both.
Yeah.
They mentioned both a lot.
Clyde was a first-round pick, so there is that expectation. It's a bigger deal when I see a guy that's a fourth-round pick in Sneed's case or whatever, or this year in Trey Smith's case, he's a sixth-rounder. We know he fell in the draft because of the medical stuff that was going on with him. Chose not to opt out, which a lot of people, you know, were looking at opt-outs from certain players, and some teams took guys that opted out off the board and everything like that. So, I think it's one of those things to have in, like, the back of our mind now. Like, when I hear Mitch say that, let's see how this season progresses, if he even wins the starting job at right guard. Because that's not a sure thing.
No,
He seems like the guy you want to win the job, right? You draft him 6th overall, he's got the size, he brings the attitude and all that, and he's on a rookie contract and everything. So, coming out of camp, if Trey Smith wins the job, not only is he the best guy there because he won the job,
he beat out
but
two veteran guards to do it, most likely.
That, just like, I mean, deep down, if you were being honest with yourself, you want your rookie in Creed Humphrey, as far as where you drafted him, to be your starting center. I think he's going to be. Trey Smith, a sixth-round pick. If you can have Niang, your right tackle from a year ago that you drafted, you can have those guys contribute where you don't
and
have to.
And they chose them. It wasn't based
correct.
On injury in the middle of the
yeah,
season.
I mean, that, yeah, I mean, not only is do they trust them in their plays at that level, but from a financial end, that's what you need to hit on, guys. Then you all of a sudden, you've got guys, while you might be spending a lot of money on the left side of the O-line with Thuney and perhaps Joe Thuney and perhaps also Orlando Brown on a big deal after this, you can afford to do that if you're all of a sudden you've got three guys on the right side of your line that are rookies on rookie deals. That's a possibility that they have.
Well, that's the way to build any elite unit, no matter where it is, defensive backs, corners, safeties, wide receivers, whatever it's going to be. That's the way you correctly build a, you know, elite unit across the board. It's like any player. I don't always want to be the guy like, dial it back in. I am interested to see him play. How often, as we are broadcasting live from the Chiefs training camp field, and we will, we're, you know, steps away from the field, every single day they're up here during the weekday, I want to see where they use him, who they put him up against. And honestly, we can knock this defensive line a little bit, but if all of a sudden you got to go up against Chris Jones or Frank Clark, versus what you'd been going up against in college, that'll be a pretty quick test in the department of just how good you think you are. The interesting thing about Trey Smith, and the reason why I'm a little less, hey, pump the entire brakes on him, was he fell for a medical issue that wasn't related to physical playing ability. That's why people say he fell. Say he fell because he had a condition that wasn't like he was coming back from an Achilles, he wasn't coming back from an ACL, he didn't have shoulder or neck issues. It was a completely separate issue that he has now been cleared of. And if he is clear of that, and he should have been a third-round pick, he's talking more like we were talking about Niang before he opted out. And then I'm much higher on Trey Smith's ability or chance to get the job.
Right, because if he was the third-round pick, then us sitting here and everybody that's been talking up Trey Smith, probably nobody more than Jay Binkley, who might also be Trey Smith's agent.
I'd be expecting him to start.
Yeah, but because he's a sixth-rounder, people are a little more hesitant about it. But if he's got that ability, then let's see how camp progresses over the next 4 weeks or so.
I think Mitch has got him beat after he said Will Shields, but...
Yeah, but like Bink was acting as if he was Trey Smith's agent overall, citing all kinds of stuff from back in high school and stuff, and all kinds of like mentality and stats from college and everything. So Trey Smith, if you come out to camp as a Chiefs fan over the next couple of weeks, you're not going to miss him. I mean, he looks the part, and you add in what you hear everybody talking about, and he himself talking about with the attitude part. Like, it all makes sense why you can dream a little bit and want this to maybe be the guy that's your right guard if he's able to step up to the NFL competition as quickly as people believe he is capable of doing so. The defensive line, you brought that up. Like, he's going to go up against Chris Jones and at some point Frank Clark out here. Those guys will report later on this afternoon. We still don't know what's going to happen in terms of games played this year for Frank Clark. Is there a suspension? If there is one, does it happen early on in the season? Or is it later in the year? Is it something that's pushed to 2022? There's a pass rusher out there in the NFL that suddenly is unhappy with where he's at, and that's Chandler Jones over in Arizona, one of the better pass rushers in the league when he's healthy. Now, last year he only played in a couple of games. He had some injury issues. That's not been the story of his career. If you look back, he plays about 15 games a year. Last year was the outlier in that. So the injury stuff, it's concerning because it happened last year.
And he's getting older.
But take the injury stuff out of it. I don't see a scenario, Cody, where Chandler Jones, for those that are saying, oh, the Chiefs should be interested in him because he's requested a trade.
They
he's
should.
Unhappy. I don't see it, Cody. Tell me how it works. Honestly, I want to hear how it works because he wants a new deal. Chandler Jones does. Chandler Jones... at a position where you already have all this money committed to Frank Clark, the Chiefs have, what, $7.5, $8 million in cap space this year. Chandler Jones was on a five-year, $82 million contract. He's not happy. He wants a new deal. He's set to have a cap hit of $20 million this year. The money does not work. It doesn't make sense. And I'm usually like, oh, the cap, you could always find a way. Tell me how you find a way, because you would have to trade for him.
Extend him.
Oh, yeah, there's that guy, Orlando Brown Jr., who is playing out his rookie contract. I'm going to have to possibly, if he's the guy we think he is, give him a five-year, $100-plus million contract.
Correct.
Am I going to give Chandler Jones, who will turn 32 next year, a contract, even if you parted ways with Frank Clark, who you would still have to pay some money to next year?
Some, yeah.
No, I'm out, man. The money doesn't work. Stop dreaming on this one. You're wasting your time.
But this is what they need. It's continued to be their need for years, seemingly, probably since, like, Tamba Haali. Justin Houston. I should say Justin Houston. When those guys were on the team, that's when they had a reliable pass rush you could get to. If you cut Frank Clark next year, you'll save around $14 million.
But how much is on the books still?
12.
12, and then you want to give me an extension for Chandler Jones. Oh, and also probably have to give up a first-round pick. I'm out. It's just too steep, man. Too steep.
If you're the Cardinals and somebody will give you a first-round pick, you should trade Chandler Jones. You should do it just because he's unhappy. Like, it's not worth sometimes doing the battle, the mental gymnastics teams try to pretend they're going to do, in order to hold a player hostage who no longer wants to be with your organization anymore. Especially when you could get value back, and especially when they're 32 and cost $20 million. But he has been the most underrated pass rusher of the last decade. Partially because he played in New England, where everyone is nameless, faceless, unless your name is Tom Brady. And partially because he spent the last couple of years in Arizona, where everyone is nameless and faceless, because mostly, as an organization, they largely haven't mattered until Kyler Murray showed up. But he is one of the most consistent pass rushers in the entire NFL.
I don't doubt the
production.
So
I would kick the tires. I'm not saying the math on it is hard. I can't come up with the way the math works. I will completely agree. I can't personally figure it out. But I'll let Brett Veach and Brant Tillis or whoever... get with the money guys to have that conversation before I just say no way.
Yeah, I mean, the production, I'm not arguing that whatsoever. I mean, the production is there. Last year, he only played in five games, but I don't think that's a long-term injury or anything like that. The year prior to that, he had 19 sacks, then 13, then 17, then 11, then 12.5. That goes back to his, age 25 season. It's just the production I'm not as concerned about, but also he will be 32 next season. And so if you say, well, I'll just take him on a rental. Yeah, but why would Chandler Jones in that regard be happy in that situation unless you say, well, he's going to a contender?
And if you're the Chiefs, you're not really in the rental market unless no. it's a free agent in the offseason to me.
No, I mean, we had the conversation. You were like, oh, the Chiefs, $4 million for Melvin Ingram is too rich. And now you're trying, and I understand Chandler Jones is a much better football player.
Significantly
but,
better.
But if that was an issue, you think they're going to be able to put $20 million on the books this year? Where are they? $20 million on the books this year? It doesn't exist.
The other part that they said is that he's unhappy with his contract. And I am trying to figure out a little bit, and this is a question I guess I would have for Jones, is how much more do you think you should be? Is this an unhappy with the years or the dollar amount? Because we can talk about the years. My guess is that it's more about that and his want to get one more contract with guaranteed dollars attached to it, even if it is only some guaranteed dollars before the end of his football career. And that makes a lot of sense to me. He's a 31, 32-year-old player. I'd be looking for one more, Chandler Jones quality, I'd be looking for one more four-year guaranteed, you know,
yeah,
where
let somebody else pay that.
$30, $40 million.
The track record of 32, 33, 34-year-old pass rushers maintaining that level of play is not good in the National Football League.
No, it happens, though. Those guys tend to be 33, 34, 35, and they start bouncing around as the I'm Julius Peppers, I'm here for 1 year, here are your 11 sacks, I'll move on. But it's not like
you're not giving
never
up. But you're not. You're also in those scenarios. You're right. You're only paying the contract. You're not also having to give up draft capital.
That's the problem.
I mean, that's the Chiefs are going to have pick 28 to 32. We assume. Hopefully, it's pick 32 in this upcoming draft after they win a Super Bowl out in L.A. because we'll be there. But the draft pick compensation is a huge. There's too many deterrents for me on this one. Like the player is fabulous, but I just don't think. I think we're dreaming quite a bit here to make it work.
The one thing I would say about the older thing, like Justin Houston's a similar age to Chandler Jones. Justin Houston had that 22 sack season. Was that in 14? He had 22 sacks. Since then, he's been a double-digit sack guy like once. But Chandler Jones' drop-off has never really happened. He's just stayed at that level of production seemingly forever. That's where I'm like, I don't know. It's like the age is a number thing, and I know we always worry about it because we had this conversation with Travis Kelce. I'm like,
yep.
It doesn't matter with him. You're like, well, I think that drop-off's coming eventually. I'm like, I see zero sign of it, none, until he shows some sign of, like, dipping a little bit. And there haven't been that many tight ends productive into their mid-30s, just like there haven't been that many defensive ends productive into their mid-30s. But if he's talking a four-year deal, you're only into the mid-30s in the back half of that deal?
I would be worried just that the same complaint the same complaint we now have with the Frank Clark contract. To me, you're just asking for yourself to be right back in the same spot. And I understand.
Just develop a pass rusher, maybe.
And I understand Chandler Jones. The numbers have been far better the last 2 years than where Frank Clark has been. Easier said than done to develop. Of course, I mean, we saw this past draft was not a good pass rusher draft. None of them. There was one taken in the top 12, like that. So look, Kando was out here earlier, one of the Chiefs picks, but I think that's more of a longer term play. For Kando, maybe he surprises us all. I don't view him having much of an impact this year, Kando, as a pass rusher. But we'll see. Again, we'll see how training camp. There's always a name that surprises everybody. Maybe he's someone that is ahead of the curve. It's hard to imagine in that case. Someone else that we've seen, even though he's not a rookie, because much like Juan Thornhill, he's coming back from an injury, is DeAndre Baker. DeAndre Baker was out here at least yesterday. I did not see him today. I think some of the if you were a veteran, even if you were someone that was out here yesterday and on Saturday, today really looked like, from what we could tell, was just rookies. And then later this afternoon, veterans are going to report. But DeAndre Baker was out here, Cody, and that's someone I think they clearly are thinking they can count on heading into the season. They liked them before the unfortunate injury. But when you look at the cornerbacks, and you got Snead and you got Charvarius Ward, and then it's Fenton, Baker, Hughes. What are you gonna do there in the secondary? I talk all the time about Tyrann Mathieu, but still, if we're just looking at specific corners, I think they are counting on DeAndre Baker being someone that, as the season progresses, can be a contributor.
Mike Hughes has the second most amount of snaps in a cornerback. If you don't count Tyrann Mathieu, which seems like I'm cheating a little bit, it depends on how you're out of the corners. The guys labeled as corners. Snead only played in 9 games last year. DeAndre Baker's only played 1 full year. Hughes has never been the starter that Baker was when he was on the field, but he's just been in the league and playing longer. So he's actually got there. It scares me, but I think they're counting on Baker a decent amount. It's that or they're counting on Fenton. It's really only those two that you can talk yourself into.
Yeah, I think the upside is much higher for Baker, for sure, though.
Oh, it absolutely is. I think Fenton's got a chance to be just one of those, what a nice player to have around. and you kind of for a second hesitate if he gets cut 2 years from, not cut, let go 2 years from now as a free agent, and he gets some 2-for-12 deal, and you're like, should it have been Fitnick gone? I don't know, but maybe. And you know, the kind of player you're supposed to rotate in and out of your organization. Good on a rookie deal, let somebody else pay the money, move on to the next guy you sign, exactly like that. That's how I view Fitton right now. I think they're legitimately counting on DeAndre Baker to make their defensive backfield better this year. Otherwise, because if he's not any good, more Tyrann Mathieu in the slot is coming.
We are going to have a chance over the next couple weeks to see these guys up close. And there's a lot of different areas you could say you're interested in watching some of the wide receivers. But it's hard not to say, in addition to Chris Jones lined up on the outside on the defensive line, it's hard for me not to say that the cornerbacks and seeing Hughes and seeing Baker and Snead again, even though we saw 9 games of it, that group, if you're saying one of the, how high on the list of watching after defensive end, for me, it's watching Baker and it's Hughes in terms of as camp progresses that I want to watch a little bit to see how they look.
It's gonna because that's an important. It's an important position.
They clearly, you know, not that it always works out, but they obviously feel good. They didn't bring back Bashaud Breeland. You know, and you know my feeling on that, where to me they swapped Hughes and Breeland, and I don't like that swap. I know they didn't directly trade for him, but essentially you got Hughes, they got Breeland, and there was a quick swap of draft picks. You know, like I don't like that trade-off, but because of Hughes' age and where he was drafted, it's
not your
mistake.
And there's only a million and a half different, it does seem stupid, yes.
You know, so we'll see. Maybe Hughes is a guy we're all talking about 3 weeks from now. Who knows? But, you know, Baker, in the very small bit of time we saw from him last year, he was impressive. But it is about as small of sample size as you could possibly imagine before he had that unfortunate injury.
Yeah, and
that special cart that he had and everything.
That's the difference between me, like Baker and Hughes. You're like, who would you count on more? I'm like, Baker, he was a starter. He was a 16-game starter. He wasn't good at it, right? He struggled in their defensive scheme, but he was also a rookie with a lot of pressure on him. He was a first-round pick. He was playing for a bad organization who eventually fired that defensive coordinator anyway, so they weren't in a good position anyway. Hughes never really started.
No, he was a bust for the Vikings. Luckily, he's their bust, not your bust. So those expectations aren't there for you. You're banking that. You can, of course, like we see in the NFL a lot of times, like you can get something out of them that the Vikings, for whatever reason, weren't. The whole change of scenery. That's what you're banking on throughout camp. He's not your first-round pick. That's essentially what you got to say if you're the Chiefs and you look at Hughes. Go in there, and it sounds stereotypical or cliche and everything, right? But go in there and just go out of there and compete and forget where you were drafted kind of thing, right?
Well, that doesn't matter to Kansas City. You're not a first-round pick.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, totally. That's the mindset that he has to have coming into camp this year with the Chiefs.
You're fighting for a roster spot against Mike Hughes, against Rashad Fenton, against Tyrann Mathieu taking snaps from you. His only chance to get a good payday in the NFL is to play well. This goes back to the contract year conversation we had. They at least have some guys motivated for the check. And you can be motivated for a lot of other reasons, right? There's plenty of guys who are motivated to win another Super Bowl. That's Travis Kelce. That's Patrick Mahomes. That's Tyreek Hill. That's Andy Reid's worry.
Yeah.
DeAndre Baker should be motivated by the check right now. How am I going to make this my living over the course of this? And the best way to do that is to ball out this year.
Our coverage of training camp, we're up in St. Joe here on 610 Sports Radio, presented by Blue KC. Live healthy with Blue KC. Coming up next, we get to the noon hour. Whit Merrifield going to join us. His name continues to come up in trade discussions. We'll ask him if this week feels any different than years past.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.